Hey guys, welcome to episode 8 of How to Get Into Investment Banking. I'm really excited about this episode, actually. There are three big things I'm going to be covering. The first thing I want to address is the whole hoopla around, hey, product group versus industry group. But more importantly, why does that hoopla exist and why do people discuss it so importantly? And second of all, if you're at a non-target or target, and particularly if you're at a non-target, does it even matter, right? Particularly given that your goal is just to get into banking in the first place. And I think the last thing that's really important that a lot of students overlook, and I think this is the one thing that's the most important thing, is to really understand kind of what your purpose is, your longer term vision that you have for your career, which is kind of centered around that idea of like what your why is, right? Because that's really going to drive your networking strategy, what you focus on, what groups you look into. And that first rollout of undergrad can impact your career in a lot of ways, right? Whether you end up having to lateral or if you can get into your exit opportunity immediately and right away, because that's something that a lot of students don't necessarily think about. They're so worried about kind of getting in where they don't think about the longer term effects of like, hey, depending on where I get in, that's going to impact how I maneuver the first few years out of college, business school, things of all that nature. So look, it sounds like a lot, sounds like it's daunting, but I'm going to go and break all this down in this episode. So I look forward to seeing you guys on the inside. Hey everyone, this is episode 8 of How to Get Into Investment Banking. So in this episode, three things that I'll be going over, a topic that I'm not really too fond of, but I know a lot of students, there's a lot of confusion around this, right? So the first thing is, you know, your product versus industry group and how much does it matter, how much you need to think about it, what is the impact of what is your career purpose and why you want to work in banking and how does that impact where you focus your networking efforts and what have you there. The second thing is that, you know, do you even have that choice or that luxury to worry about product versus industry, right? And how do you approach that, whether you're at a target or a non-target? And then lastly, the single most important thing, or in my opinion, and I'm happy to talk to any of my fellow YouTube guys out there and girls out there who talk about advice, is that I really, really think it's imperative for students to have their why figured out, their purpose, you know, what is your long-term agenda, so to speak? And then how do you tailor your networking around that? Because oftentimes students are, like I say, chickens with their head cut off. A lot of my basketball coaches would say that, right? You're just kind of running around thinking you're active and busy and you're not actually achieving a certain goal. So you apply that to your networking and your career. It's like, okay, well, you're doing a lot. You're emailing and adding people on LinkedIn and doing technical prep, but it's like, are you being the most efficient? Are you doing things in the best possible way? So with that being said, I have my slide here. Actually, let me just double make sure. Oh, great. My pen is not active. I wonder why. That can't be good. All right, guys. Well, this is going to be painful because I will be drawing with, it seems like I'll be drawing with my mouse, I guess, for today, right? Which is not the worst thing, but with that being said, let me go ahead and get rid of this and move the ruler. Okay, get rid of that. Okay, so product versus industry, does it matter, right? So here's the thing is, I want to be very clear when it comes to non-targets, like to be very clear, no, you don't have a choice, right? I'll give myself as an example. When I was a junior, I had a super day with a bulge bracket and was pretty sure I was going to get an offer, but budget reasons, whatever excuse that they gave me at the time, they just couldn't squeeze me in. And I was, everyone was shocked, like, hey, there's no reason you shouldn't have gotten it or whatever. But they had an equity capital markets opportunity. And for me, I was like, all right, well, it's a bulge bracket. It's an ECM, but it has the bulge bracket stamp. Now, at the same time, I had that restructuring opportunity down in Boston. And everyone was like, hey, look, like if you take the summer analyst role in the ECM team, yes, it's a bulge bracket name, but you will be pigeonholed because people see ECM and that's going to impact full-time recruiting and you'd have to pivot your story. Hey, I'm trying to leave ECM, going to more traditional coverage or industry group, what have you. But, you know, if you go to Capstone in Boston, your story's easier. It's restructuring. It's a much more easier play, right? So now on the flip side, had I not had the Capstone offer, then obviously I would have taken that bulge bracket ECM role and it wouldn't have even been close, right? So yes, in theory, when you think about career placements, lateraling opportunities, buy side opportunities, even industry opportunities, yes, product or certain product groups versus industry groups, there is a bifurcation as to like what the hierarchy is. But it's good to have that internally, but I wouldn't let that impact you initially out the gates, because you can't be too picky. And we're kind of get into that a little bit onto any of these next two things, right? So here's what I wanted to really get into, right? It's this bifurcation isn't as simple as you think, where it's like, hey, you know, coverage is doing a lot of, let's say, like industry work, and just the product teams are the ones doing all the execution and kind of the heavy deal lifting. The reality is that banking is so complex and so interconnected, and I'll walk through like several examples. But if you think about, you know, actual origination work, which is financing work, your traditional debt offerings, equity raises, whatever, or pure play advisory work, M&A, restructuring, etc. And then you think about, hey, what does a traditional coverage group do, right? Whether they're providing origination ideas or transactional ideas, but within a specific sector, right? So this is where things are interlaced, right? Bankers, your job is to generate ideas, right? Now, whether you go to a relationship that you have, it might be a head of corp dev or your chief strategy officer, chief revenue officer, maybe the CEO directly, and it's saying, hey, here are some financing ideas we have that might make your capital structure more optimal. You know, we can maybe get you better interest rates. We can, you know, do things to your debt that'll help kick down things down the line. So what does that mean? It's like, hey, right now your capital structure, you know, this is the interest rate. These are your current covenants. And, you know, based on your expected cash flow and EBITDA levels, you're going to either trip these covenants, or if you try to make any sort of operational changes, you will be in a lot of trouble because these covenants are not very friendly to you. So, hey, let's restructure, you know, let's get you some new fresh debt. Let's kick the can down the road, some better terms. It'll give you some breathing room, these covenants, and you can make changes and you'll have lower interest payments or whatever, right? So these are ideas that bankers are supposed to bring, right? That's just traditional financing ideas. Now, it's not just some, let's just say there's some MD in tech or industrials and they know some CFO at Caterpillar or what have you, right? Or John Deere or something like that, right? You're going to be working with your counterparts in DCM and ECM to like, hey, what have been recent relevant issuances, right? What have we actually worked on that we've been able to get our clients, right? What have been certain terms, maturities, et cetera, right? Let's make a debt comp. So similarly, like you have a comparable companies analysis, right? You also have debt comps, right? Which is like, hey, what have recent debt issuances looked right, right? And let's go and bring that to our clients. So you're going to be cross-pollinating with different groups, right? So if you think of the coverage banker who's just really focused on an industry, that DCM, ECM counterpart, while they might also be siloed, sometimes they might have a hand on all sorts of capital markets activities across sectors, right? Depends on the team, on the group, on the size of the bank itself. And so that's where things get a little muddied in that, yes, you are siloed, definitely as an analyst associate, you know, but you're going to be kind of grabbing and pulling from other departments to be like, hey, you know, not just from a literal perspective of like, hey, we need a slide from you guys, we need information on these, but at a certain level of like those ideas being discussed of like, hey, what we're showing to the client. Sometimes, and this doesn't happen all the time, because sometimes there are like directors and VPs who might just be like, yo, just use whatever ECM slide we used last time, because sometimes you may not have the time or the luxury to sit down like, hey, what's this? What's our actual pitch? What's our actual idea that we want to go and show the client? But more often than not, the super successful groups are the ones who are taking time to be like, hey, let's sit down. Let's look through the book. What is it that we're actually pitching to the client? Does it make sense for them? Is this idea feasible? Is it cost effective? Because remember, it's not like we're just pitching ideas for free, right? There is a financing fee involved. There's an issuance fee, right? Like there is money that's being generated from these transactions happening, right? And then I know I really kind of harped on the financing side because I wanted to make that point that product teams will overlap a lot with industry teams or, you know, coverage groups. But I don't want to do that and just kind of skip over like, all right, well, what if there's a pure advisor, like M&A team, right, at a bank or something? And this kind of goes into the second point. I'll just kind of keep these two both open, but if we just kind of pivot and focus on, let's go with red. I like red today. So if we just look at these two, wow, this is god awful, guys. I'm sorry. Let me, you know, I apologize. I'm not ready. I should have had my pen checked, you know? This is what happens when you're non-target, right? No. So, wow, this is awful. I'm just going to go ahead and circle industry groups, right? Industry groups, product groups, right? So now, something I want to make very clear, right? I was in a unique position when I worked in banking that we were generalists, right? So yes, there were certain sectors that were very active in restructuring at the time, oil and gas, upstream E&P, like actual drillers, retailers were kind of always there, metals and mining, things of that nature. So we never necessarily became like industry experts, right? It just happened because if you're doing a lot of work in a sector, you're going to kind of understand certain trends or what have you. But the reason that's important is because when you're generating ideas as a banker, the client is going to depend on you to have that sort of insight and knowledge of like, hey, why, what should I do from a financial engineering perspective and a potential M&A or restructuring perspective that makes sense for my company itself, depending on the industry that we're in, right? So for example, you know, I could take the company that I, and this is all public now, the company I work at right now, Vroom, for example, we just purchased UACC, right? Which is a lender. So, you know, our bankers or our chief strategy officer or chief revenue officer, excuse me, sorry. You know, those conversations at a high level, how they start is like, hey, right now, Vroom, you guys send, you know, clients to other lenders. But, you know, if you look at Carvana, what do? They kind of have their own in-house lending, right? So it's like, why would we, as Vroom, not think about that? Hey, let's go and purchase a lender so now we can send our customers to our own lender and, you know, not have to pay a spread. Because so now instead of sending to Chase or whatever, we're going to send them to our lender. And that's what our competitor was doing, right? And we're like, well, if we want to be as big as they are, then that's something that we should look into. So those are conversations that a banker can only have, right? If they know the auto space, if they know kind of, hey, how does a B2C place work? And now there's such a convergence of all these. This is going to be really interesting, for I think, for bankers, because you have this traditional world that now everything's being impacted by technology, right? So, in a, you know, 20 years ago, an automotive, you know, an auto trucking transportation banker might know everything about like equipment manufacturers and actual car makers and, you know, some oil and gas domain knowledge, but they're not necessarily going to be thinking about the intersection of tech and all that, right? But now it's like kind of like, hey, companies like Vroom, like, yeah, we're an e-com company, but we deal with like a very heavy physical product with cars, right? And there are, you know, big OpEx line items, right? So you're not a traditional tech company where you're a CapEx light, right? Like, we are capital intensive, right? Reconditioning of the vehicles, shipping costs, things like that, right? So I say that to say that that's how conversations start, you know, when you think about, hey, what does an industry banker do versus the product team? Now, at a lot of these banks, those industry analysts and those product analysts will work hand in hand, right? Hey, on developing the company model or the M&A model. So that's where things get different, is like, hey, the M&A team is going to be doing M&A work, M&A execution, but there are still going to be analysts who are working on, you know, the company model, right? So for example, hey, how does a pro forma transaction look like? So there is a lot of overlap. And then at the same time, you do have to rope in your ECM guys, your DCM guys, because it's like, hey, are we issuing original more equity? Are we going to be issuing more debt? What sort of terms can we get? Who's getting diluted? We still have private investors, right? So it's not like just there's one banker, some one MD working on this, right? Big transactions require input from a lot of people. And so I say that to say that at a high level, you should just be lucky to be getting into banking, right? And I can say that because I went to non-target. So I was just fortunate that, hey, I'm getting into it. Now, as it pertains to most folks, if you start early, whether you're at a target or even non-target, yes, you can be mindful of that. Like, hey, now I know what industry groups do, which is like, hey, we focus more on a specific company, we're building company models, we get a little bit deeper into the industry. Yes, you will definitely still be involved with origination and financing work, but depending on your bank, some of that stuff will be led by the other analysts, right? You might not be building out certain waterfalls or certain roadshow materials. You might be doing the bulk of it, but certain things are just not going to come from you. It's a real, you know, division of labor, which is very important, right? And especially that's how you scale, right? You can't just be one person doing everything, unless it's those boys at Moelis who work really hard. But I guarantee you, like, any analyst and associate at Moelis is probably so well fine-tuned and just knowledgeable, knock the socks off of anyone. I feel like anyone who worked at Moelis, you just have automatic like respect for him. Like, okay, yeah, this guy or girl 100% knows her shit, could definitely build a model off of a K in Scratch in probably 3 hours. Knows about restructuring, M&A. I could talk to them about 363s. I could talk to them about, you know, reverse Morris trust. I could talk to them about anything. Like, you work at Moelis, you're going to come out of there a fucking savage. So, you know, I mean, you're going to work a lot, but you will be very knowledgeable and you'll be kicking ass. So anyway, let me hop off the Moelis train. Fun fact, I met Ken Moelis. I was on a date and it was a corner of 27th and 10th because I lived on 28th and 10th right next to the Marquee. And we just got off the High Line because the High Line entrance is on 26th and 10th. It's like it's next to the World School and like in between that, like there's Marquee. Sorry, well, if you're facing Marquee would be here. And the World School is here, and the entrance to the island's there. So come out, and I see Ken Moelis and his wife, and I was just like fanboying so hard. And he was like, "All right, dude, like, calm down." No, but he was really nice. A little bit of a tangent, but I told him a story about how I read an article about Ken Moelis. I think it was like December. It was Christmas. It was 1983 or 1987. I'm not sure, but he was an associate. And his boss was Leon Black, actually, funny enough. And it was a story about how Ken and his then girlfriend and now wife, they were going to go on vacation. And it was like, it's Christmas. And Ken wanted to take time off. And then Leon Black was like, if you go on vacation, don't come back. And I asked him, I was like, oh, is that true? Like, I read that story in an interview, dude, but like, what's like, is there any sort of blemishes or is this like fully true? And he's like, no, that was true. And then his wife was there. And she was like, yeah, I remember that phone call when he told me we couldn't go on vacation. And I was just like, damn. So anyway, that's fun Ken Moelis fact. But going back to here, you know, what I have on the deck, and you guys can obviously download this, you know, full disclosure, obviously the link's there so you could download it, read it, review it, whatever, is that while you're going to be doing different things in industry groups or product groups, I know I've really kind of dived into you know, if you're an industry banker, you're not going to get that exposure to different sectors, right? If you're in tech, you're going to be working with different aspects of different products. So financings, IPOs, maybe SPACs, ECM activities, debt offerings, whatever, M&As, LBOs happening in the space, you know, you're going to be doing that stuff. But if you pivot to product groups, again, the focus is really on the transaction builds, right? It's like, hey, how does this M&A build look like on a pro forma level, right? How does this LBO affect the capital structure pro forma, right? That's where that heavy blocking and tackling comes in that for you guys are doing. But the difference is that you're not going to have that siloed exposure to a specific industry. It's going to be more varied. And that's, again, dependent on your bank, your firm, whether you're a generalist, how big it is, how much bifurcation and division of labor that there actually is. But the one thing that I did want to point out is here is number two, is that if you think about a product group like ECM versus a DCM group and then product team, remember how I said earlier is that let's say you're working on a large pitch, you know, whether it's idea generation or actually putting the deck together and you need a page or two from the ECM team. The ECM team will work on they're working on IPOs for multiple clients, right? They're working on equity capital markets activity work for a plethora of clients, right? Now, what that means is that the industry team, let's say there's some tech company, some trucking company, whatever, they will go to the ECM team like, hey, we need these comps, right? Or we need to know what type of issuances have been gone out. Like, hey, who were the investors? How big were how big were the rounds? How big were the dollars that were raised, right? And that stuff will come from them. But if you're an ECM as an analyst, you're going to just be doing that. Like you're not going to be doing company operating models, right? You're going to be focused strictly on capital markets activities whether it's a certain sector, all sectors, but it's just all things related to equity capital markets activities. And that same analogy applies to debt capital markets as well, where you're just looking at debt offerings, debt comps, you know, what are leverage ratios? You're going to be using a lot of LCD, which is just like I wouldn't say it's a news. I mean, it's pretty much just like all debt related information for companies is there, right? Term loans, yields, everything related to debt. So your world will just be encompassing just debt. Now it's very likely that if you're in your group for a year or two and you want to move, you could move within your bank. You could, and if you're in a DCM group, it would be, I'd argue, would be very easy to move into a LEFIN group or whatever, because you probably have a strong understanding of like, hey, just credit, debt, leverage ratios. You're just, you speak that language, right? There might be a little bit of a transition. Maybe the modeling is probably not that strong, but you know, you spend a month or two, you can really ramp up your skill set. So with that being said, the last thing I did want to talk about, I know I've like touched on this, is that the workflows vary. Excuse me. But yes, you guys probably hear all this and it's like, yes, you probably do want to be on an industry group, a strong coverage team, depending on the bank. Yes, some groups do their own M&A work, their own product work. So again, it depends on the team. But what I say at the top right here, and I wish there's a way to highlight this or pick like a kind of like a smaller color, but the reality is that that definitely wasn't it. Sorry, guys. Is that right here? The reality is that you want to actually, sorry. Wait, my bad, guys. The reality is as follows, that while you want to be at a really strong group, and I'm here at the bottom of the screen to orient you guys, is that I would say overall it's overhyped in terms of product versus industry, because it's so dependent on the firm you go to. And you know, if a team has a really strong left fin team, they're doing a lot of good capital markets work, but their product teams are weak, sorry, their industry teams are weak. It really depends on, like I say right here, guys, perception is everything, right? Like I always say, it's the group, the brand, the work experience, your actual skill set. And now, look, I know I wrote here on my slide, I'm like, look, capital markets groups might be at a disadvantage because the skill sets do not overlap. So if your focus is PE, then you want to be in a strong product group, a strong industry group. You know, you want to work on specific deals, get specific skill sets. You want to learn how to run certain deals. Now, I say that, but I say that with the caveat of like, it's highly dependent on the bank you go to and the opportunities that are presented to you. And now this is why we go to my next slide, is that, yes, even at a target, right? And this is where I'm kind of getting right into it here at the top, guys, is that, you know, we talk about, you know, what these different groups are, what are the differences, you know, does it matter where you land? Assuming you have a choice, looking at you fellow non-targets. Now, again, if you're the non-target, you have to just try to find the strongest bank possible, which is a combination of like the best brand, best group that you can get into, because it's not really relevant right now. If you're at a target school, you're in multiple processes. Yes, you have the luxury to choose to be like, you know what? Hey, I'm hell bent. I'm going to the buy side. Growth equity, large cap, you know, mega fund, whatever it is you want to do, you can kind of tailor your networking because you're going to have a plethora of opportunities within that space. And you'll have probably great plan Bs, right? And a great backup option. So this is why it comes down to like, what is that one thing that students need to do? And I wish, like, I really hope a lot of students here, is that the one thing that you need to do is really think about, what do you want to do in the long term? And I'm not saying to have a granular, you know, detailed 1,000-step plan, but give it some time and thought to think about, hey, what are the industries or verticals that you're interested in? Because your initial group out of undergrad can and will impact your future roles, right? Think about what you want to do down the line. And it's okay if you don't know, right? It's the whole goal of this exercise is it's to identify, excuse me, that why, and then drill in on that industry, because that's going to help you drive your networking strategy. And this is what I'm really big on, right? Like, this is it. That's the golden, the, you know, suitcase or the golden egg, right? Is that have an idea, at least on the periphery, of like, hey, what are some industries, verticals, services, products, technology even, that really resonate with me? And then think about, hey, what are the industry groups? What are the, you know, what are the industries that this falls under? And then from there, you can make, all right, what are the banks that are most active in this space? What are the teams that have done the most capital raises, you know, equity raises, debt offerings in the space? Which banks have done the most M&A work, the most LBO work, the most, you know, the strongest coverage team, the biggest coverage team? Like, are there specific banks that are really niche focused right in this space that I like? Because then what that allows you to do is like, if you know you want to do something in consumer retail, then you can really hone in on that. And then you can really start reaching out to folks and just develop yourself as like a master of that ecosystem, right? It's like, hey, who are all the buy side players? Who are all the lenders, right? Who are the lawyers in that space? Who are the journalists? Who are the, what are the newsletters? What are the vlogs? What are the newsletters? What are the podcasts? What is that space? And just becoming a master at that domain. Who are the angel investors? Who are the actual entrepreneurs in that space? What are the top companies? Who are the top, right? And that's another thing students don't do, right? Is like right here that I've highlighted, start thinking about all that, right? Who are the corp dev professionals? Who are the finance professionals in these actual companies, right? Because if you want to be in consumer retail and like that is your thing and you want to work at a you know, a transformative retail company, I don't know, right? It would behoove you to understand who are the biggest players, who are the biggest up and coming upstarts, who are the biggest startup companies that are, you know, leveraging technology to drive change and disrupt the space, right? I don't know. Reach out to the finance folks or reach out to the corp dev folks, right? Really build out a robust ecosystem. And this is something that I talk about. I'm going to talk about in a few episodes about the concept of building an army, right? So now, right here, guys, and I'm going to end it with this, is that, look, unless you're a top target, I understand it's going to be very hard for you to pick and choose where you interview end up. But even at a target, guys, remember, it is very tough. And you are not the only student in your school, nor are you the only target school. So yes, the one thing, your why, will drive your actions, but you have to remain flexible, because at the end of the day, you have to take an IB offer versus, you know, not taking it, assuming that is what you want to do, right? So whether you're at a non-target or target, it is very important to identify this one thing, right? And actually have that kind of guiding north, so you know how to maneuver and you're kind of moving with purpose and not just like a kid who's just applying to random places, right? So again, all right, look, guys, what I want you to do is make sure you download this PDF. I see, because I have like the link trackers, I see a bunch of people click on the PDF, but they don't download it. You can download it. Just, it's on the top right. So make sure you download it so you can go back, review these notes. And then folks who are listening on Spotify, also, I have so many listeners on Spotify. I was like shook to see how many people listen to me on Spotify. Guys, subscribe on the link, like click on how to get into investmentbanking.com. So you get these episodes, right? And, so you get these updates. So look, again, like, subscribe, it really helps. I never thought I'd be one of those people to say that, but it really does help. And then look, in conclusion, guys, your why is incredibly, incredibly important. There's no denying that. I'm happy to discuss that with anyone who doesn't agree with that. So, but look, thanks again to everyone who watched this. I hope you liked it as much as I like making it for you. Obviously, feel free to leave any comments, email, text me, leave comments below. I'm literally everywhere on social media, TikTok, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram, wherever, right? Facebook, like I'm everywhere. So I'm readily available. And you guys have my number, so you can text me. But with that being said, guys, it was a pleasure. And in conclusion, I will say this, is that, wow, 26 minutes. Will I make an episode less than 20 minutes ever in my life? Who knows? But in conclusion, product industry, I think it does matter, but what's more important is getting to the strongest place you can get to, and that, in having multiple offers and then deciding, hey, what makes most sense for me. So anyway, guys, I will talk to you guys later. Peace. See you next week.